Hello, everyone. This is Sally Cragen. We're here with Poetry Podcast with Paula and Sally at the FATV Studios in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Our theme today is going to be winter, and I'm here with my friend Paula Giaquinto, and we're going to read you some poems about winter, and you can decide whether winter is your favorite season, as it is for many of us here in North Worcester County, Massachusetts.
Hi, Sally. Thanks. This is going to be fun. So we're going to start with Sonnet 97 by William Shakespeare, the poet, playwright, man behind much of what we celebrate in the arts and language. And thinking about winter, and who might have some words to inspire us or share, my thoughts went to the man. So here is Sonnet 97 by William Shakespeare. How like a winter hath my absence been from thee, the pleasure of the fleeting year. What freezings have I felt, what dark days seen, what old December's bareness everywhere. And yet this time removed was summer's time, the teeming autumn, big with rich increase, bearing the wanton burthen of the prime like widowed wombs after their lord's decease. Yet this abundant issue seemed to me but hope of orphans and unfathered fruit, for summer and his pleasures wait on thee, and thou away, the very birds are mute. Or if they sing, 'tis with so dull a cheer that leaves look pale, dreading the winter's near.
Thank you for reading that. That was Sonnet number 97 by William Shakespeare. I think we're really used to hearing the joys of, you know, love and coupleship. I mean, when you think of the sonnets, you think that, oh, they all could fit right on a gift card at Valentine's Day. But that's really not all of it. This is like, you know, the Tempest. This is King Lear versus the merry comedies. We just read Twelfth Night at the Main Street Studios with the Fitchburg Cultural Alliance last Sunday. It's a read aloud of Shakespeare plays, the entirety of the play. And that's the play with Toby Belch, who's like a precursor to Falstaff. But, you know, there's not a moment of like real seriousness. And this poem is so serious. What freezings have I felt? What dark days seen.
What old December's bareness everywhere. Boy, isn't that the truth.
It totally is the truth.
Yeah.
We live, I don't know where you're listening to this, you may be on a South Sea island, but our landscape is deciduous trees and, of course, conifers. The conifers hold on to their needles, but the deciduous trees, the maple trees that provide, you know, like oceans of maple syrup in the spring, they drop their leaves. And they're gone. It's just skeletal frames.
Yeah, the landscape looks very different. And it depending on how the light is, I mean, there are many days that are gray and the light hits things differently. But the landscape is many, many shades of gray and grayish brown and beige. And it's such a shock compared to the colorfulness of the natural world in autumn in New England.
Exactly. It's like what the reverse of what happened in my childhood, which is we had the black and white television, and then sometime in the late 60s, that television turned into a color television.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we do that in reverse. The other lines that really I adored were, but hope of orphans and unfathered fruit, that line about unfathered fruit. And it's all about hope and waiting.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a bird person. I love the birds at the feeder, birds in nature, birds from the top of Mount Wachusett. So I listen for the bird songs, and in the spring and summer, they're so abundant. But now there are crows and blue jays, and occasionally you can hear something calling, but, you know, the cardinals chirping in the treetops, but the birds, the very birds are mute, or if they sing, 'tis with so dull a cheer. And I, you know, I think, oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to go out and listen for the birds, and maybe today won't be too cold or too icy or too snowy, and there'll be birds. So I, this really struck me.
That I love that, with so dull a cheer. I've seen the crows on the golf course as I drive around, as I drive home or drive away. I see them all kind of massed, you know, poking away at whatever they can find. And I think it's like a Wyeth landscape, like the late period Andrew Wyeth, where he just so got into that Pennsylvania countryside of monochrome.
Monochrome.
Yep.
Monochrome.
Well, that leaves look pale, dreading the winter's near.
Yeah. No, it's very nice. And then, of course, I looked at this and researched it and thought, yeah, this is a good choice. And went outside, and there were 24 turkeys in the backyard. So I thought, well, I guess no one stole the turkeys, that it's cold and dark and bare, and because they were finding lots to be happy about in the backyard poking around.
Well, they do have those tiny little heads that are just an extension of their necks. So, well, talking about our landscape, I actually have a family member who was a poet in Fitchburg. Her name was Josephine Eaton Cragen, and she was a member of the Eaton family, which was one of the early founding families of Fitchburg. She lived over on Franklin Road, which is a road that kind of comes off of the 5th Mass Turnpike, which runs parallel to the big east-west highway Route 2. When she was living out there in the late 19th century, her farmhouse was the only one, but she had a view of Wachusett. And her personal story is that she was married to one of my, not direct ancestors, but a kind of a ne'er-do-well, Charles Cragen. And he left at one point, but she had four sons. One of them tragically died in a 4th of July incident, quote, playing with a cannon, quote. So little Alfred Cragen, he's commemorated on the family stone at Forest Hill Cemetery. And after that, Josephine started writing poems. And they show up in the historical record. This is one called Under the Snow. Over the snowfields piled so high, spring-like cloudlets are drifting by. Under the snowfields far below, where the elves and the fairies come and go, wonderful things are being planned, none but the fairies can understand. Far down below, under the snow. Slumbering, slumbering under the snow, tiny grass roots are lying low. How can they tell, so wrapped in death? It is almost time for the south wind's breath. How do they know in the brown earth deep when to wake from their wintry sleep? How do they know, under the snow? Silvery musical mountain rill, once so restless, but now so still, bound by the ruthless ice king's chains, longing, waiting for April rains. Crystal brook, it will wake ere long, wake to the thrill of the bluebird's song, murmuring low under the snow. Hasten sunshine and balmiest breeze, pity the plaint of the leafless trees. Quicken the mystical life below, till leaf buds burst and maples glow, and the willows don their drab and gray. Mute little Quakers in sober array. Oh, the life below, under the snow. Mm. So her rhythms are definitely in that 19th century Longfellow, sort of iambic, you know, da 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 da. But I love this poem because I live a mile and a half from her house. And we have a brook that's by our house because Oak Hill Road, as the DPW commissioner recently remarked at the Conservation Commission meeting, Oak Hill Road, Oak Hill proper, sheds water in every direction. And that is why the ice freezes on some of the major roads and causes the, you know, the problems with potholes, et cetera. But the, you know, she starts it with, over the snowfields piled so high, spring-like cloudlets are drifting by. And then under the snowfields far below, where the elves and the fairies come and go, wonderful things are being planned. None but the fairies can understand. Far down below, under the snow.
And I love that sort of dreamy quality of elves and fairies, and then later in the poem, the ice kings, so that there's, I can picture this whole sort of magical realm that we're not privy to because we tromp on the surface. And, you know, and then it also shifts to the bluebird song and the trees, and so that there's a wonderful connection to imagination and nature, I find, through this poem that, again, brings hopefulness through the winter.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I was noting that the use of Shakespeare using the word dread. I don't think there's ever been a summer poem written with the word dread.
Yeah, probably not. Unless you're talking about the rain.
True. But yeah, the fantastical personification of presuming, well, there's magical creatures that make all of this happen. And I think, you know, that kind of thinking was just, it was such a part of Victorian culture. And what's our next poet, who is not a Victorian at all, although he was born in the 1880s, is sort of in between. Do you want to say a few words about Claude McKay? And then you're going to be reading To Winter by him.
Thanks, Sally. Well, Claude, again, looking for researching winter-themed poems and poets, Claude McKay jumped out at me. He was a key figure in the Harlem Renaissance. And I was thinking, you know, this is a season of celebration, and we're listening on the radio or wherever you get your media to all kinds of old standards around, you know, Christmas or different holidays. And I thought, yeah, how wonderful it is that we have the arts to provide insight into different points of view and all kinds of communities. And the Harlem Renaissance was a way for me to learn about the arts from all kinds of communities other than my own, growing up, now. So I really appreciate this poet and his poetry. And I will read To Winter by Claude McKay. Stay, season of calm love and soulful snows. There is a subtle sweetness in the sun. The ripples on the stream's breast gaily run, the wind more boisterously by me blows. And each succeeding day now longer grows, the birds a gladder music have begun, the squirrel, full of mischief and of fun, from maple's topmost branch the brown twig throws. I read these pregnant signs, know what they mean. I know that thou art making ready to go. Oh, stay, I fled a land where fields are green always, and palms wave gently to and fro. The winds are balmy, blue brooks ever sheen, to ease my heart of its impassioned woe. One thing about Claude, he was born and grew up in Jamaica. So I just thought it was lovely, and I can picture again, this, to me, this poem would make a beautiful drawing or painting or collage, because he starts with calm love and soulful snows and then moves to the land where he came from with palms and breezes. And so, again, it's winter, but it brings images of warmth and green and a whole different hopeful view of the winter world.
And you can tell, I mean, he uses antique language at points too, like, I know that thou art making ready to go, O stay. And then the, I fled a land where fields are green. And when you think about, again, books of the Bible, first there's Genesis, then there's Exodus. That idea of being displaced from your homeland is such a pervasive theme throughout, you know, human culture. But then, you know, here he is. He's not, like, bored by winter. He's not afraid of winter. He's making note of it. His sensitivity is so high. Anytime I meet people who are from a different latitude, my first thought is, and how do you like our winters?
Yeah.
And that usually occasions some laughter. But he's using some imagery from the sort of earlier era, but this is so conversational. This is a great choice.
Yeah, yeah. Very conversational. Yeah.
So our second poem by Claude McKay is The Snow Fairy. Throughout the afternoon, I watched them here. Snow fairies falling from the sky, whirling fantastic in the misty air, contending fierce for space supremacy. And they flew down a mightier force at night, as though in heaven there was revolt and riot. And they, frail things, had taken panic flight down to the earth, seeking peace and quiet. I went to bed and rose at early dawn to see them huddled together in a heap, each merged into the other upon the lawn, worn out by the sharp struggle, fast asleep. The sun shone brightly on them half the day. By night, they stealthily had stolen away. And suddenly my thoughts then turned to you, who came to me upon a winter's night, when snow sprites round my attic window flew, your hair disheveled, eyes aglow with light. My heart was like weather when you came. The wanton winds were blowing loud and long. But you, with joy and passion all aflame, you danced and sang a lilting summer song. I made room for you in my little bed, took covers from the closet fresh and warm, a downfull pillow for your scented head, and lay down with you resting in my arm. You went with dawn. You left me ere the day, the lonely actor of a dreamy play. Oh. That's amazing.
I love that.
The transition from the personifying the snowflakes as the snow fairy, and then how they disappear and they have this fantastical entrance. And then it goes to the poet's lover and companion who comes in exactly the same way.
Right, right. And that end is so Shakespearean to me.
It is.
That dreamy play,
yes.
That Midsummer Night's Dream, that, you know.
Now our revels have ended.
It gives me chills. And then what really struck me about this, just beautiful, that, you know, we hear Frosty the Snowman like about every 10 minutes.
Yes.
And how he, you know, would like to stay and play, but, you know, he's melting away. And I thought this whole first piece never talks about Frosty the Snowman like things. It's snow fairies falling,
yes.
Whirling. You know, and when I was growing up, there was a black and white cartoon in the winter. Here comes Susie Snowflake. Look at her tumbling down. It was I don't even know if there's a file or a record of that anywhere. But I used to love it because it personified the snowflake in a way that was not, I don't want to say common or ordinary. It was really magical. And I view this, you know, through in heaven there was revolt and riot, and they were so frail, they sought peace and quiet and huddled together. And the imagery is just so beautiful, but not mundane. And it's snowflakes. It's a snowstorm. I loved this poem. Loved it.
it's both deep and passionate, but it's also, you know, fanciful and humorous. Again, I think that he must have been a really he must have been a really curious person, and someone who, you know, who has a lover at midnight. You have to love that and respect that.
Yep. I thought this was great poem.
So we have one more poem for our winter podcast here, and we actually have a poem by Paula.
Hey.
So Paula, would you like to introduce your poem and then read it?
Sure. So this is called Sunday in the Burg, Thinking of Spring. And, you know, I do spend a lot of time outside just sort of wandering around, observing and thinking about nature and the environment and all the small moments that I pass in the day. And so I'll just read it. Sunday in the Burg, Thinking of Spring. I have friends who travel the world hoping to find home, while here I am in Fitchburg with an inclination to simply open the door. Aptly named, it's Sun Day. Too cool for coffee on the porch, but wholly, wholly perfect anyway. Clear blue skies set no boundaries for birds or my observations. Neon green, half-leaved trees mean business growing. Minute by minute, minute bud by minute bud. Flowers still, except daffodils, whose orange and green ruffled trumpet cups blast their spring song. Long-awaited music to my eyes. I wait and wonder what's coming next in fascination. It seems I've won a surprise Sunday lottery. Scent and sound, color and congregation. The fox visiting three times this week is back. Gray in the woods shadow, his musky trail in the breeze a giveaway. Along with squirrels in a frenzy of agitation. Goldfinches peep, peep, peep along with the 8 o'clock church bells. Blue jays and catbirds dip and sip at the vernal pool. A swarm of chickadees' wing noise adds a chorus of invitation to all. Visit the feeders, please. A flock of turkeys responds, marching up the driveway. Gobble, gobble, gobbling bird and grass seed without discrimination. I count one chimp up, see two, while the shadow of a hawk, three chipmunk Z4, creates fury among the crows in the treetops. Their murderous communication serves as a far and wide alert to every squirrel and bird nation. Guard your nests. You may be next. Do flowers and squirrels and foxes and birds think about the winter's end? About flocks and nests and food? About every day? About today? For these few Sunday minutes, they have all of my attention, not thinking about my agenda, about what's needed, what's next. I listen and watch and sit silent. Silent, stopping. That's it.
Sunday in the Burg.
Sunday in the Burg.
By Paula Giaquinto. I love how you started with, I have friends who travel the world hoping to find home. I've lived in large major metropolitan cities, but I always thought this place was my home. And I think that, you know, you're having been to your house and your garden and also your real benefactor role for the wildlife. there's a lot of bird feeders up by Paula's way. I love the swarm of chickadees' wing noise adds a chorus of invitation. Visit the feeders, please.
Yeah, I participate in Cornell has a wonderful resource for people who like birding. And Merlin is a bird identification app. And they have a huge library of identification tools by size and shape and color and bird song. And I like birding. So that the opportunity to be outdoors, even in the winter, watching and observing. And then, of course, I mean, when you have a yard full of dozens of turkeys, how can you resist?
Well, exactly. And I think the thought that I'm coming away with is this. Every bird is a poet.
Yeah,
right? They're all poets.
Yep. Yeah.
So I'm looking at the clock on the tiny little clock on our reader, and I'm going to say thank you to everyone for listening. My name is Sally Cragen. I'm here with Paula Giaquinto with Poetry Podcast with Paula and Sally, which comes out to you from FATV. Visit FATV.org to learn more about our wonderful local cable access. You can visit Creative Writing New England on Facebook, and we'll see you next time.
Yep. Thanks, Sally. Thanks, everyone. Have a good winter.
And now I will pull up the music by my brother, Hal Cragen, amazing musician.